thanks to our newest patrons, Deborah and Elizabeth. Also, thank you to a wonderful father and human being, John Burdick. This episode is dedicated to him. This is Becca.
This is Molly.
We're here to talk about Jane Austen.
Sometimes when we're doing introductions, I just like lose it for a moment.
Yeah.
Let's try it again.
Oh boy. This is already going to be interesting.
Yeah, let's try it again.
Okay. This is Becca.
This is Molly.
We're here to talk about Jane Austen.
I, Molly, have never read any Jane Austen before in my life.
I, Becca, have read many Jane Austens before in my life.
To be honest, actually, though, now I will have almost read one entire Jane Austen.
Guys, we are just 3 chapters away from the end of Pride and Prejudice now, which means Molly can never say she's never read a Jane Austen book before, because now you have pretty much read the most famous one.
Yeah, and let me tell you, I spilled coffee all over it this week. Like, all over it.
I mean, have you ever really read the book if you haven't spilled coffee on it?
That's true.
This is very controversial in, like, the world of book readers, but I like a well-worn book. Others like to keep their books really pristine.
Indeed, I agree. And, well, actually, it depends. I borrow a lot of books, so obviously those books gotta not spill coffee on them. And I like the pristineness of them. But when I'm doing something like this, I mean, our patrons have definitely seen my book at this point and know that I scribble all over it. And now there's coffee all over it. Which is funny because it wasn't even that I was, like, surprised and spilled my coffee. It was a very surprising chapter, but I just picked it up, it clanked against my teeth, and just, like, splashed out all over all the whole thing.
We've all been there. We've all been there. It looks so well loved, though. Molly, hold up your book to the people, and we'll screenshot a picture of it.
Should I hold it, like, this angle?
Open her up.
A random page.
Let's see if I can screenshot this. That's the ugliest picture taken of the two of us ever. But the book looks great.
So speaking of crazy chapters in Jane Austen,
this is possibly the most action-packed sequence of chapters I have assigned you.
Yeah, I have a feeling, based on the amount of notes that I take, that this is going to be one of our longer episodes.
It's going to be a long episode.
I have to say, listeners, dear listeners, Becca was like, do we want to do 3 more episodes of this book or 2 more episodes of this book? We could break it up 14, 15 as one episode, 16 as its own episode, and then the last 3, or we can do 3 and 3. And I was like, let's go get them. 3 and 3. I want to finish the book, but I have a lot to say, so apologies.
Yeah. Molly's like, we can give them a longer episode. And I was like, it's going to be longer.
Yeah, but it's okay because it's worth it.
Yes.
Oh my God. All right. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, let's get into it.
For those following along with their own books, we are reading chapters 14 through 16 of volume 3 of Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, yes.
So we have 3 more chapters left of the book after these chapters, so we are nearing the end. And for those of you who know this book really well, you know what happens in these chapters. They're a big deal, but we're going to stop talking around the chapters and get into them now. So let's recap what happened in the last chapters. Last chapters that we read, Jingly became canon.
Ah, yes.
Or for the older folks that listen to this podcast, Bingley proposed to Jane and she said yes. And everyone's real happy about it, especially Mrs. Bennet, who now considers Jane her favorite daughter.
Yep.
So now we're going over to the next set of chapters. And at this point, we have Bingley and the Bennet ladies sitting together at the table.
Yes. And Darcy is away. He was called away on business or something.
Yes.
So they're at the table, hanging out. And they hear a carriage approaching. And my first thought was like, this is to be Darcy coming back already, but it's not.
It is not.
The carriage doesn't look familiar to anyone. The equipage doesn't match any of their neighbors. And I looked that word up and it's basically the equipment with the horse.
Yeah.
I guess they all have like their family horses. And Bingley and Jane decide to go for a walk because they don't want it to be too overcrowded. But oh boy, do they know how overcrowded it truly would have been.
Oh,
because
boy.
We've got a big personality coming in, guys.
Not overcrowded with people, but definitely overcrowded with ideas and personalities and egos.
Yes, it is none other than Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Bow, 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 bow. And everyone is surprised. Lizzie, like, whispers to her mom, that's Lady Catherine de Bourgh. And they're like, ooh, that woman that Mr. Collins always talks about. I forgot that they haven't met her.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, only Lizzie knows Lady Catherine de Bourgh. And this is a very weird visit.
Yes. Oh, is it? So she comes in. Lizzie's like, hi. And she doesn't say anything. She just sits down.
She just walks in pouting already. She's just already got the pursed lips like,
Yeah, I fucking hate her. She doesn't even speak to anyone except for Lizzie, being just so inconsiderate. And she turns to Lizzie and she's like, that lady, I suppose, is your mother. And that, I suppose, is one of your sisters. Like, talk to them, to their face. They're right there.
Nope.
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 She's just gonna talk straight to Lizzie.
Mrs. Bennet is trying to impress her by talking about how their youngest daughter just got married, which is probably not the best thing to bring up, and talking about how Jane is about to get married and all of this stuff. And Lady Catherine then goes on to just insult their house and their grounds.
And instead of sort of like taking it politely in stride, Mrs. Bennet's like, yeah, but I assure you, our grounds are bigger than the Lucases.
Yeah. She doesn't, this is a meeting of two very, very different high-end personalities.
This is basically Real Housewives of Regency era England. It's
yeah.
Messy.
Yeah, it's messy. Lady Catherine asks Lizzie to go take a walk on their unimpressive grounds, and Lizzie goes with her, and they walk in silence. And Lizzie sees no point in making any effort for conversation with a woman who is now more than usually insolent and disagreeable. She's being even extra for Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
For like a high-class lady, she has no capacity to hide how she's feeling because she doesn't even want to. She's just furious and she's not even doing the polite pleasantries. She's just walking in, barging in a bad mood, which is uncomfortable for everyone.
Oh, very. And she starts out by saying, well, you must know why I'm here. And Lizzie's like, no. And then she just goes in. And I wrote down a few quotes, and I want to just preface this entire episode by saying that I'll be impressed with myself if I don't just read the three chapters aloud to you all, because there's so many zingers.
Oh yeah, this has a lot of like bite-worthy quotes. There are a lot of lines in this that you're like, oh, Jane Austen's a great writer.
Yeah, very. So Lady Catherine de Bourgh says, I am not to be trifled with, but however insincere you may choose to be, you shall not find me so. My character has been celebrated for its sincerity and frankness, and I'm not going to stop that now. And it's funny because her character is not celebrated for those things.
Well, I think she might be celebrated for her frankness because sincerity and frankness are nice ways of saying blunt and rude.
Yeah, you're right.
So if there were anything that you wanted to celebrate Lady Catherine de Bourgh for, it would be her sincerity and frankness.
With huge air quotes around it, mind you.
Yes.
So she goes on to tell Lizzie that she's heard rumors that she and Darcy are to be married. And though she knows that it must be a lie, she wouldn't injure Darcy to believe him capable of stooping to that level. And she came here to tell Lizzie exactly how she feels about it. And Lizzie says, if you know it isn't true, then why did you even come here?
Exactly.
Exactly. And Lady Catherine says she needed to hear it from Lizzie's mouth to be certain. And Lizzie says that Lady Catherine's coming to Longbourn to call on her will just spur on the rumors, if there are rumors. And Lady Catherine is like, if? Like, have you not been spreading them yourself? Have you heard these rumors before? And Lizzie's like, I haven't heard these rumors before. And then Lady Catherine de Bourgh asks if there is no foundation for the rumors. And Lizzie says she would prefer not to say. She pleads the fifth.
She is pleading the fifth so hard in this chapter. She is avoiding the question.
Which is so telling about how she feels.
Yeah. I also think this is in the study questions, but it is so interesting as to why Lizzie is avoiding answering these questions. Because you could read it as her holding out hope that Darcy is going to come back and propose. Or you could read it as her pride being insulted by Lady Catherine de Bourgh coming here and being like, don't marry my nephew. You won't, but don't. And she's like, well, why wouldn't I?
It's interesting because I hadn't really given much thought to like why she would be avoiding the questions. I had just been thinking about what it means and like what it achieves. I guess because literally no one knows about her and Darcy except Jane, maybe. Does Jane even know?
I think Jane knows he proposed to her.
Jane knows he proposed, but Jane doesn't know that she... Oh, Jane does know that she changed her mind. Doesn't she?
Yeah. But Jane's not saying anything.
No.
Like, Jane is not a gossip.
No.
But I think, like, imagine how you would react if you had a crush on a pretty lady and her, say, like, her ex came up to you and was like, hey, you don't get to date my ex. Are you dating my ex? Would you not answer because you wanted to date her ex? Or would you not answer because it's none of her fucking business?
So I'm not actively dating her ex, but I wish I was.
Like, you have a crush on her. You don't know if you have a shot.
I would say no. I would say I'm not. I wouldn't say I prefer not to answer that. I would probably just say I'm not. But then I would feel guilty about it because I wanted to.
I would say it's none of your fucking business, which is kind of what Lizzie's saying.
Well, you're definitely more of a Lizzie, and I'm definitely more of like a Georgiana.
Oh, BB. Let's be real. You're a Bingley.
I'm a Bingley, and you took a quiz, and you got Jane, so.
Does that mean we're meant to get married?
We're married.
Yay. Podcast toasts forever.
Yay, married and podcast-dom. We'll get over the, like, you being straight thing later.
Yeah, we'll figure out a way around that.
So yeah, I get there are definitely multiple ways to interpret like why she would not be telling her. Mostly I think she just doesn't give Lady Catherine the time of day ever. She never has.
Oh yeah, she's so good at not playing into Catherine's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. So Lady Catherine is pissed and she's like, well, has Darcy proposed to you? And Lizzie says, your ladyship has declared it impossible.
Ooh, ooh, it is becoming such a cage match here.
It is heated.
It's been a while since we've seen Lizzie be this sassy.
I know. I love sassy Lizzie. This is like chef's kiss. Ugh. Lady Catherine is like, well, maybe you lured him in with your charms. And Lizzie's like, well, I won't confess it if I have. And Lady Catherine says that she's entitled to know all of Darcy's business. She's his closest living relative. And Lizzie says, yeah, but you're not entitled to know mine. And Lady Catherine says that Darcy is engaged to Baby de Burgh anyway. And Lizzie says, well, if that is so, then there's no reason for you to believe he has proposed to me. And Lady Catherine says they've been promised to each other since birth. Their engagement, she refers to their engagement as tacit, which means understood or implied without being stated, which gives away that he has not agreed to this.
Oh, yeah, no. This is what I was just about to say, is that she's awfully insecure for a woman who says that they have been engaged. Like, oh, if they're so engaged, then why are you so worried about this girl?
Like, why are you here?
Exactly.
You know, like, if he's engaged, then you shouldn't be worried. But she's like, nothing can stop this engagement. And she thinks that Lizzie has a chance of stopping that engagement.
Yeah, because there is no engagement at this moment.
Exactly. Neither of them have agreed to such a thing. Can you picture for a minute that Anne de Burgh would look at Darcy and be like, yeah, that's who I want to marry?
No, Anne de Burgh, 10 out of 10. We've been over this.
Gay.
Poor gay girl stuck in her house.
Yeah, so this isn't happening on any front at all. And Lizzie says, well, if there is no other objection to my marrying your nephew, I shall certainly not be kept from it by knowing that his mother and his aunt wished him to marry Miss de Burgh, which is hilarious.
Lizzie is delivering the zingers in this part.
This entire back and forth is just so good.
You want your popcorn? Like I said, we're doing Real Housewives of Regency era England.
Mm-hmm. Then she says that they can plan it all they want, but ultimately it's Darcy's choice to make. And if he chooses Lizzie, why should she not say yes? And then Lady Catherine is like, honor, decorum, prudence, nay, interest forbid it. And she says that if she marries him, she will be shunned by his entire family and all his friends for ruining him. And Lizzie says the wife of Mr. Darcy will be happy enough without the love of his family and friends, which is so freaking cute.
She loves him so much.
She loves him so much. She knows that, like, she wouldn't give two shits about what Caroline thinks. Like, she just wants to be with Darcy.
Caroline's barely Darcy's friend.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, right. She's not even related to him.
Of course. No. No.
I forgot.
She wants to be his wife.
I forgot whose sister it was. My notes are all about Caroline and Louisa, about his sisters.
Molly.
They're not his sisters.
Oh, no. Molly, no.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. Wow. Good. Okay. Lady Catherine says then, is this my repayment for showing you kindness when you were at Rosings last spring?
Did she show her kindness?
She did not. Not at all. And Lizzie, oh, and then she tells Lizzie that she came here with a purpose and she will not be deterred from that purpose. She will not leave without achieving that purpose. And Lizzie says, that will make your ladyship's situation at present more pitiable, but it will have no effect on me. And Lady Catherine then goes on a rant about how wealthy and noble Darcy and Baby de Burgh both are and how perfect they are for each other because their families are ancient and, though untitled on his father's side, that's Darcy. So even there, he's not as good as her. Like, she has to point that out. Like, they're meant to be together. And what is to divide them? This is a quote now. And what is to divide them? The upstart pretensions of a young woman without family, connections, or fortune? If you were sensible of your own good, you would not wish to quit the sphere in which you have been brought up. But wouldn't she, though?
What we have here Do you hear the classism dripping off that speech?
Oh, yeah. And also huge double standard.
Yeah. What you're hearing. Remember how when we first talked about Baby DeBerg and Darcy getting married, I was like, yeah, we talked a lot about how women need to like marry for money. But when people are that wealthy, they marry to merge fortunes.
Right.
Catherine DeBerg is basically saying that her daughter's lot in life and Darcy's lot in life are to marry each other, consolidate the wealth at the top, which is preordained as it should be. And that Lizzie Bennet is lower and has to be content with her lot in life because that's what's proper. It's a natural order of things argument. We have talked a lot about class in the book, but I don't think anything has been as explicitly classist as this statement from Catherine DeBerg.
Yeah, and also what's wild about it is that like people of Lizzie's status are taught their whole lives that they're supposed to be marrying up. And if the people that are up are like, we don't want you, then what then?
Well, they're meant to make a connection of some sort.
Well, Lizzie's made a love connection.
She's also made an advantageous love connection, whereas Darcy has simply made a love connection.
I love him so much.
Oh.
With his sweet little stupid face.
He is so dumb. He is so dumb.
So Lizzie points out that she is a gentleman's daughter and Darcy is a gentleman. So why would that be bad? And Catherine DeBerg brings up her mother's side of the family. And she's like, don't think I don't know who your mother's family are. And Lizzie says if Darcy doesn't mind her connections, then it should be no bother to Lady Catherine. And Lady Catherine says, once and for all, are you engaged to Darcy? And Lizzie wants to not answer, but she feels bad or something and says, no, I'm not. Which is, And then Lady Catherine asks if she will promise never to become engaged to him. And Lizzie says that she will make no such promise. And then Lady Catherine says she won't leave without a promise. And Lizzie says this was like the first reasonable. I mean, Lizzie's reasonable a lot, but this is the first time that anyone has addressed the classism of this book and the notion of like having to marry certain people being unreasonable. Lizzie says that it is wholly unreasonable to promise that. And even if she did, it wouldn't make him any more likely to marry Baby DeBerg. She said she's very mistaken about Lizzie if she thinks that she could promise such a thing. And she tells Lady Catherine that she has no right to be meddling anyway, and please stop. And she tries to walk away. And then Lady Catherine says, not so fast. I need to tell you also that I know about Lydia's infamous elopement.
Woof.
Yeah. And like, why bring that up? Oof. Kick her when she's down, I guess.
Well, I think that's like a last-ditch attempt because Lizzie has already insulted Darcy in Catherine de Bourgh's eyes by saying, well, actually, I'm the same level as Darcy.
Right.
And she's been like, oh, don't play that game with me. I know what your little sister did.
Yeah, and she points out that it was covered up by her father and uncle, which is wrong. It was covered up by Darcy, but she doesn't know that. And she doesn't want such a girl to be her nephew's sister. She says, quote, are the shades of Pemberley to be thus polluted?
Gross.
Gross. But Lizzie is like, that's enough. And she walks away. She's like, doesn't say anything. And then Lady Catherine says she has no regard for the honor and credit of Mr. Darcy. She calls her an unfeeling, selfish girl. And again, Lizzie says she has nothing to say. And then Lady Catherine says, then you are resolved to have him. And Lizzie says she didn't say that either. But she will act in such a manner that will ensure her happiness, without regard to Lady Catherine's wishes.
Woof.
Lady Catherine is like, then you're determined to ruin him in the eyes of his friends and the whole world. And Lizzie says, quote, with regard to the resentment of his family or the indignation of the world, if the former were excited by his marrying me, it would not give me one moment's concern, and the world in general would have too much sense to join in the scorn. Lizzie is so smart.
She is.
And Lady Catherine leaves by saying, I take no leave of you. I send no compliments to your mother. You deserve no such attention. I am most seriously displeased.
That is the one-star Yelp review of dismissals in this time.
Yes.
I give no thanks to your family.
I don't hope you're well. And then Lizzie goes back inside and her mom is like, did she just come to say hi? Did she just come to send her regard from the Collins? It's like, what did she want? And Lizzie's like, yep. And that's it. That's that chapter.
Yeah, that is a doozy of a chapter. That is a messy chapter. It is a classist chapter. I fucking love Lady Catherine de Bourgh because she's a bitch.
Yeah, I hate her. But that sums us up pretty well.
I've always loved characters that are powerful older women who are mean as hell.
For sure.
And that is Catherine DeBerg. But this chapter really does highlight how she is a bad person.
She's a bad person. She's just a bad person. So moving on to chapter 15. Lizzie can't stop thinking about this interaction, and she wonders where the rumor about her and Darcy originated. She thinks maybe it just arose out of speculation over Bingley and Jane's engagement, because, like, Bingley and Jane are getting together, Lizzie and Darcy will be spending a lot more time together, what's the logical next step, etc. And she thinks that the Lucases probably came to this conclusion. We're talking to Charlotte. Charlotte told Collins, and Collins told Lady Catherine de Bourgh, and she took it to mean that they are engaged. So that's what Lizzie thinks happened.
Yes.
I don't know if that's true, but pretty much everyone seems to think that Lizzie and Darcy hate each other, so I don't know where it would have come from, but, like, whatever.
I mean, at least the Lucases saw them interact at Rosings.
Oh, right. What's her name? Maria.
Our favorite protagonist, Maria.
Yeah, the star of this book.
Absolute star of this book. She makes another appearance in this chapter very briefly.
Does she?
Oh yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Okay, so she figures that Lady Catherine will also probably confront Darcy about this, and she'll be applying to his weakest side with this argument, and she gets really worried that he's going to be like, oh, okay, and then won't want to marry her.
She's worried that his pride will overtake him again.
It's in the title. It's in the title. She thinks that she'll know if he will have been convinced by Lady Catherine de Bourgh if he doesn't return to Bingley in the 10 days' time that he had promised. And she thinks to herself, I shall then give over every expectation, every wish of his constancy. If he is satisfied only with regretting me when he might have obtained my affections in hand, I shall soon cease to regret him at all.
Oh, man.
We know that's not true, sweet, sweet Lizzie, but
she is in, like, full pining mode.
I love it. I love this for her. She deserves it. So the next day, Daddy Bennet comes to Lizzie with a letter and says that he would like to talk to her. And she thinks, oh no, Lady Catherine wrote a letter to my dad. And he says, I did not know I had two daughters on the brink of matrimony.
This is, like, Daddy Bennet is having a ball this chapter.
This chapter is Daddy Bennet just going ham. He thinks that he's calling Lizzie in there to, like, laugh and joke with him about this letter. And the letter is from Mr. Collins.
Who just shows up to ruin everyone's day every so often.
Yeah, that's exactly what this was. Like, there was no need for him to write this letter. I was so confused. But basically, so I tried to summarize the letter because it's kind of long and wordy, which is true Collins fashion.
Yes.
So I tried to summarize it. The basic points that he hits. Congratulations about Jane. I hear Lizzie is also soon to be engaged, but I need to warn you that Lizzie marrying that man would be a bad idea. And Daddy Bennet looks up at Lizzie at this point, and he's like, Lizzie, can you guess who he means by this? And then he goes back to the letter, and Collins has said that the man's aunt, Lady Catherine de Bourgh, does not approve.
We haven't done this. I haven't done this one yet. Catherine de Bourgh.
Beautiful. She does not approve of the match.
Nope.
So then Daddy Bennet looks up and he's like, his aunt, Lady Catherine de Bourgh, this means Darcy. And he thinks that they're going to have a big chuckle. And he says, Mr. Darcy, who never looks at any woman but to see a blemish, and who probably never looked at you in his life.
And Lizzie's like,
that's exactly what she's doing. She's so uncomfortable. She's got, like, wide eyes and she's like,
Yeah, she's like, totally, he never proposed to me, and I did not obliterate him with the sheer power of my words.
And she's like, please keep reading. And Collins thought it was his duty to warn them as quickly as possible after Lady Catherine confided in him about the rumor, which is funny because Lady Catherine has literally already been there to talk to Lizzie about it. Like, he did not have to do this at all. He then adds that he's also glad that Lydia's engagement was hushed up, but he was disappointed in Daddy Bennet for letting them visit. And he mentioned, quote, had I been the rector of Longbourn, I should have very strenuously opposed it. And that he could forgive them, but never want to see them again.
In which case, I think Daddy Bennet makes the good point of, like, that's forgiveness.
Yeah, exactly. I think that we see a good side of Daddy Bennet there when he's like, that's not, like, forgiving them means forgiving them. Although, I don't think Daddy Bennet has forgiven them, and that I think he let them there out of obligation to the rest of his family, but that aside.
He has a great quote about Collins as well after that line.
Oh, it's coming. He says that he hopes Lizzie isn't going to be missish over this, which I looked up, and it's kind of a gross word because it's like miss-ish, like being like a little miss, and it means affectedly demure, squeamish, or sentimental, and I just don't like it. Like, just say, I hope you're not going to be upset about this because, like, it's supposed to be funny, but whatever.
Yeah, it's a bit of a sexist word.
Yeah. He says, for what do we live but to make sport for our neighbors and laugh at them in our turn? Which sums up Daddy Bennet pretty well. And then I think this is where he does the quote about Collins. So he talks about how it's so funny because it's so unbelievable. He says, "Much as I abominate writing, I would not give up Mr. Collins's correspondence for any consideration. Nay, when I read a letter of his, I cannot help giving him the preference even over Wickham, much as I value the impudence and hypocrisy of my son-in-law. And pray, Lizzie, what said Lady Catherine about this report? Did she call to refuse her consent?"
It's so prime because he hits correctly on everything and he's joking.
Yeah, he's like, "Ha ha ha, Collins, ha ha ha, Wickham, ha ha ha. Did Lady Catherine de Bourgh actually come to refuse her consent for you to marry Darcy, who hates you and who you hate?"
And Lizzie's literally like laughing to avoid crying.
It says she replied only with a laugh because she could not say anything else. And oh, this was a sweet quote that I wrote down. "It was necessary to laugh when she would rather have cried. Her father had most cruelly mortified her by what he said about Mr. Darcy's indifference." She thinks that maybe he's right? Question mark? Because it ends by saying she had fear that perhaps instead of his seeing too little, she might have fancied too much. Does that mean she fears that over her dad not seeing the whole picture and that being what makes him laugh, she likes Mr. Darcy too much and he's actually seeing more of the picture than she thinks?
Which is so relatable.
So relatable. I mean, if you hear someone say that they saw someone laughing about you or I don't know, whatever, like, or like talking to another girl, then yeah, you're gonna be like, "Oh my god, I thought, am I reading all the signs wrong?"
Yeah, I mean, you're really like, I don't know if this is just me, but when you get told someone doesn't like you or like they don't care about you or didn't look at you, you are more likely to believe that person than you are to believe the actual instincts you have.
I'm glad that's not just me.
Oh my god, no, because we all are terrified of putting ourselves out there and getting hurt or being made to look a fool for misreading the signals. And we all have our instincts that tell us when there's chemistry or tell us when we like someone or when someone's sort of flirting with us. And to varying levels, we are accurate in those. But like, you know, most people are pretty perceptive. Like we can feel chemistry. But when we misinterpret it, it is so painful because it's not only sort of hurtful, it's humiliating because then you feel like you've imposed on somebody else. So you're terrified that you've misread. So it's easy to believe someone who doesn't know the whole story if they tell you that the person's not into you.
Right, because you assume that with an outside eye, they'll be more accurate.
But sometimes people with the inside eyes are the ones that are more accurate because you're the one experiencing the feelings.
They're getting the full picture.
You're the one experiencing the one-on-one connection.
Exactly. Luckily, chapter 16 clears that all up for us. This is where I spilled coffee.
Oh my god, this is where you spilled the coffee!
Yeah. It was right at the beginning of chapter 16. I was like, how apt that this should be the chapter that I spill all over. Y'all, this chapter is what we have been waiting for. Actually, no. There's one thing missing from this chapter, and I'll talk about it at the end. But let's get into what happens in this chapter. Becca is like shaking with anticipation.
I'm so happy right now.
So chapter 16... it's a few days later, and Bingley brings Darcy back to Longbourn, which means his aunt did not get to him or did not convince him not to come, which we'll get into soon. So Lizzie's nervous because Mrs. Bennet is going to tell him that they saw Lady Catherine, but before she gets a chance, Bingley is like, "Let's all go for a walk." So the girls and Bingley and Darcy go, and then Jane and Bingley hang back because they want to walk together, and then Kitty is like, "I want to go to Meryton and see Maria." That's where she comes back.
Yep. But I love the little moment where it's like a trio of Kitty, Darcy, and Lizzie.
Major third wheel. But she's so unaware.
Kitty having no idea what's happening.
No idea. She didn't even remember his name when he last came. She was like, "Isn't that that man?"
Oh my god. I stan Kitty as the Bennet sister we get to know the least over the books. She's just crazy. She's great.
I love her. I hate her, but I don't hate her nearly as much as I hate Lydia. So I think I love her a little bit. Because she's great. Anyway.
You gotta.
She walks to Meryton, so Lizzie and Darcy walk boldly on alone. And Lizzie is feeling empowered, and she works up the courage, and she says that she knows what he did for her family, and she is just eternally grateful for what he did. And I don't know why he apologizes that she found out, but he's like, "I'm so sorry that you had to find out. I thought your aunt was more trustworthy." And Lizzie assures him that no, it was Lydia who was untrustworthy.
He doesn't want her to feel like she owes him anything.
Oh, because like the time when he was like, she was telling him about Lydia and he was like, "I don't want to give you any like it's okay because, like, it's clearly not. I don't want to make you think that I'm just being nice to you to win your favor. I know this sucks. And this is the same vibe.
Same energy.
Ah, I love him. So then she continues just thanking him on behalf of her whole family. And he says, if you will thank me just for yourself, because I only acted in the hope of giving you happiness. He said, quote, much as I respect them, I believe I only thought of you. Oh my God.
That is just, he is so heart melty in this part, because also, you know, like, he is doing like somersaults in his head.
He's like, she's talking to me.
He's not only, he's like, she knows. And also he's like, she's talking to me cordially. We're alone, just the two of us now. He's overwhelmed.
Oh, he's freaking out.
Yeah.
He is freaking out. And also she is, and they're both freaking out and they're both walking together. And I cannot picture them actually having emotions on their faces. So I can't wait to see the movie, because I just am picturing them both standing there, like staring straight ahead, like, oh, I'm very thankful for what you've done.
I am giving nothing away about these movies.
I'm waiting for the, there's like a scene in the rain in one of them. I just know Colin Firth standing in the rain with the rain. But it's not raining here, so that's not happening yet, I think.
Oh my God, I don't want to say a single word because I've been good at not spoiling you right now, but we're going to return to that statement later.
Oh man, thank God. So... So then my notes just say, like, ah, quote from him. Darcy says, you are too,
you can't even read it.
No, you are too generous to fight. Oh my God. You are too generous to trifle with me. If your feelings are still what they were last April, tell me so at once. My affections and wishes are unchanged, but one word from you will silence me on this subject forever. He still loves her, and he just told her, and he said, if you still don't want to marry me, just tell me and I'll drop it, but I just need to know, like, one last time. And she's like, no, I like you. She just blurts it out. She's like, no, I've completely done a 180, and hearing you say that right now makes me really happy. And then...
Can you imagine Darcy being like, okay, it's happening. Oh my God, it's happening.
Then it says that he behaves... At this, he expresses himself as sensibly and warmly as a man violently in love can be supposed to do. I cannot picture Darcy doing any kind of exuberant exclamations of joy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that, like, he's like, okay, we have to keep it calm. We have to keep it chill. It's all happening. We're gonna stay calm.
But he's smiling real big.
Yeah, he is.
And Lizzie's not looking at him. She is staring straight ahead, and she doesn't see how he is behaving right now. So they're just not making eye contact and professing their love to each other, which is on brand. So they keep walking without knowing the direction, because they don't have any time to pay attention to anything except catching up on all that they haven't said to each other all this time. So they talk about how Lady Catherine did indeed go to Darcy and appeal to him. And what she did, though, with the intent of making him have his pride, like, overcome him and be like, okay, I shouldn't marry her, is she relayed the entire conversation with Lizzie and all of those I won't promise not to marry him things that she said gave him a hope that maybe she would.
Basically, you have to see it this way. Mr. Darcy thought, from the time that he proposed, when she said there is no way he could have asked her that she would have said yes to, and nothing he could do to win her affection. Remember, you were the last man on earth I could ever be prevailed upon to marry. And so he took that as, okay, no hope left in the world, but maybe I'm going to become a better person. And then he's just, like, pining after her so sadly for so long, just being like, oh, she'll never love me, but now I love her even more. Oh, she'll never love me, but now I love her even more. And then his aunt comes to him and she's like, can you fucking believe it? I went to this girl who you might marry. And I was like, don't marry him. And she was like, don't tell me what to do. And he was like, she said, don't tell me what to do. What? And then there was just, like, this little perk up in his brain. He goes, wait, I can? What?
Yeah, he gets this, like, a little spark of hope. And additionally, like, he says, I know you well enough to know that if you did not want to marry me at all, then you would have just told my aunt that. And Lizzie says, quote, you know enough of my frankness to believe me capable of that after abusing you so abominably to your face. I could have no scruple in abusing you to all your relations. And Darcy, and, like, talking about proposal get-in. And then Darcy is like, you didn't say anything that I didn't deserve. And then Lizzie says that she doesn't want to argue over who was most to blame in that situation, because they were both to blame and they've both improved as people because of, you know, the human capacity for change.
Growth.
Because of growth. And he says he can't forgive himself that easily. He replays in his head over and over again her saying, had you behaved more like a gentleman? Though it was months before he was able to admit that she was right, he says.
Honestly, okay, I'll say this. Have you ever, like, clocked someone for being really atrocious in how they treated you?
No, I'm shy baby.
Oh. So I have confronted certain people in my life and been like, hey, you were really shitty. And the satisfaction of hearing Darcy be like, I was really shitty.
Feels good.
It is so good when someone acknowledges that they treated you like shit.
Yeah.
So listeners out there, this also goes the other way. If you have wronged someone and they've called you on it, be honest with yourself. Have you actually been terrible to them in some way? And do you owe them an apology? Because you never know. You could have a Mr. Darcy situation if you amend your behavior and just apologize.
Yeah, hell yeah. Apologies are good.
Yes.
We love owning up to our actions on this podcast.
If there is one thing to take away from Pride and Prejudice, it is that if you meet the right person and you call them on their bullshit, then, like, the human capacity for change is something real. I say all this meaning, like, not toxic people, cut out the toxic people, but, like, people who've just been a jerk.
George Wickham. We don't stand George Wickhams, we stand Fitzwilliam Darcy's on this pod.
Exactly! We don't want to forgive the Wickhams, but we do want to see growth in the Darcy's.
Yeah.
Well put, Molly Burdick. Look at you, you little Austen scholar.
I'm almost a scholar. So she then says she doesn't realize how much of an impact her words had had on him. And he says he could never forget the way she looked at him when she said that there was no way that he could ever propose to her that would make her accept him.
It definitely turned him on.
You gotta make it sexual, don't you?
Listen, if Austen didn't in these chapters, at least I should.
Yeah, you're right. It's like Shakespeare. He did it flat out, though. But
yeah.
She says, please don't repeat anything that I said that night. It's too painful for me to think about. And then they discuss his letter to her. This is like the different parts. They've discussed proposal again. Now they're going to discuss the letter.
They're rehashing basically the buildup to their relationship.
The whole thing. And he asks, was it like soon after she read it that she started believing him? And she says, it had a gradual effect. I started to slowly see that I was wrong about you or like this and that. And then he says that he hopes she destroyed the letter because he remembers certain parts of it that might have been cruel, which, yeah, the whole first half of it.
I'm just thinking about how you reacted to the first part of the letter and then the Wickham part of the letter. And I just love that Darcy is like, honestly, I thought I was so cool-headed when I wrote it, but now I see that it was basically just a loud subtweet.
Yeah, he says that it was with cruel intentions and he didn't realize them at the time, but like, he was being angry at her. And she said she'll destroy it if he wants. And she gives him some credit. She says, while it began harshly, the adieu was charity itself.
They are so cute. They are just opening up the chest. They are working through everything. They are communicating
finally.
To people who have not communicated all book.
At all.
Nope. So they're finally just like laying everything to rest and being like, this is how I reacted to this. This is how you reacted to this.
This is what you meant by it, but this is how it came across.
Exactly.
I feel blank when you blank.
Exactly.
Then she says that she would rather they just forget the letter entirely. She wants him to adopt her philosophy of only remembering good memories. And he says, you can do that because you were ignorant of the full situation. I cannot do that because I know how bad this whole thing truly was. And he explains to her that he was brought up, while he had a concept of what is right and wrong, he was brought up to be selfish, to never correct his temper, to not care for anyone outside of his family circle. And he was like that from age 8 to 28. Is he 28 now?
I guess, yeah.
If Darcy is 28, that he's like our age. I mean, I'm 25, you're 26?
Yep.
27?
26.
He's like our age, practically.
That is so grim.
He's my brother's age.
Oof.
Wow. Oh, man, I want to get married to Darcy. So he says he was like that for so long and, quote, and such might I have still been, but for you, dearest, loveliest Elizabeth. And then she tells her that she humbled him, that he came to her fully believing that she was going to accept his proposal. And she's like, I didn't mean to lead you on. And you must have really hated me after that if I had led you on. And he says he was angry. But he didn't hate her. His anger soon took on a more proper direction.
Which means he was mad at himself.
Towards himself. Yeah. Oh. Becca's crying.
We love a man who has to reevaluate things based on some accurate insults from a woman he's in love with and then takes a self-discovery journey and learns how to be a better person.
We do love that. That felt like a TikTok audio. We should make a Jane Austen TikTok account. There already is one. And
it's fabulous. I've seen it.
Yeah, he's so good. So then, next subject is Pemberley and the time that she was there and he was there. And she was like, what did you think when I was there? And he says that he was surprised to see her. And she said she was surprised he spoke to her at all because she thought that he would be so mad at her for her proposal thing that she did against him.
The proposal get-in.
For proposal get-in. And he said that he had hoped in that time to earn her forgiveness and to show her that he had heard her reproofs and adjusted to be more gentlemanly. We talked about this.
We did.
I remember when we were there and you were like, has Darcy taken to heart what she said or what? And I was like, I don't know if it reached him like that.
Oh, he has been up at night just like agonizing.
He's been walking with a book on his head, like training himself to be more gentle.
He has been like staring in a mirror and being like, Georgiana, I'm terrible. How do I get better so she'll love me?
She's probably been training him to be a good person. She's probably been like, Darcy, what do we say when someone asks you to pass the salt? And he's been like, no. And she's like, no. It's like in Beauty and the Beast. When Beauty trains the Beast.
When Darcy's the Beast.
When Darcy's the Beast and his little sister is the Beauty training him. Is that weird?
Except, yeah, without the weird Stockholm Syndrome romance
soon
attached to it.
Lizzie will be training. Yeah, except for without that Stockholm Syndrome thing. But, oh well. So then he mentions how Georgie had been so happy to meet her and was so sad to see her go, which brings them to the next topic of her leaving Pemberley in such a rush because of Lydia. And we get to learn that the minute Darcy heard what had happened, he started planning going to London, which is why he got so quiet in that moment. And when he was like, I'm sorry to hear that, he was like thinking, when can I call my carriage? Like, he's ready to go right away.
He's like going through his mind. He's like, okay, these are the contacts Wickham has in London. This is where he definitely went. This is how much money I think he'll have to use to pay off his debts. Like, he is not even thinking about it. He just sees Lizzie crying and he's like, I'm gonna fix it.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's so cute. Yeah. And
guys, Molly is not okay during this episode. She's starting to keen.
I am. I'm keening. So so then it's time to go back to the house. And so they start talking about Bingley and Jane. And Darcy says he's just delighted by the engagement. And now Lizzie finally gets to ask him, did you give him your permission? And Darcy is like, permission? But Lizzie knows that, yes, by that answer, he did. And then Darcy tells her that on the evening before he left for London, which time? This most recent time after they had been hanging out?
I think the evening before he left Longbourn. Well, Netherfield.
Right. Well, the evening. So they had Bingley, this most recent time when Bingley and Darcy were coming. And then Darcy had to leave. But Bingley then proposed to Jane the next day.
Yeah.
On that evening before he left that time, he told Bingley everything about his interference in that engagement and why it was wrong. And he's like, I shouldn't have done this, but I did. Poor Bingley trusted him, and he's very surprised that Darcy would have done this. But Darcy also tells him that he thinks he was mistaken in saying that Jane didn't like him back. And then Lizzie asks if he spoke that from his own observations or from what she told him. And he says, I'd been paying attention the last couple days that I was here, and I was convinced that he does love her and she does love him. And that was very sweet. And then he mentions that Bingley is too modest to depend on his own judgment in these cases. Basically what we were talking about before.
Bingley needs 12 opinions on something.
That, yeah, that too. And that when you really like someone, you're kind of likely to believe what someone else says about how they feel about you.
Exactly.
And Darcy also told him, and he felt bad about this, that he knew Jane was in London when Jane was in London and Bingley was in London, and Bingley didn't call on her. And he tells Bingley that he kept that information from him. And Bingley, big boy, gets angry at Darcy.
Yes! Yes! You know what else we call that? Growth.
But also he forgives him right away.
Well, yeah. But
because it's Bingley.
Because basically all that Jade and Bingley really missed out on was a marriage like 9 months earlier.
Right, exactly.
Otherwise, which, like it's fine.
I mean, it's sad, but a lot of heartache. Lizzie wants to then make a joke about how easily guided Bingley is and how that makes him a perfect friend for Darcy. But then she reminds herself that Darcy has yet to learn to be laughed at. So she holds her tongue.
She knows her boy's awkward.
She knows, and she wants to train him, or help him, rather, to become less awkward. And this is something that Mrs. Gardiner had brought up. She was like, well, he wants a little in the character department, but if he marries prudently, his wife could help with that. Wink, wink. And this is proof of that. Lizzie's going to help him be a little more funny.
Basically, a sequel to Pride and Prejudice would just be like Lizzie teasing Darcy and poking him and like teaching him how to joke about himself.
And him being like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
And then they reach the house and they part ways, and this is where I get to the one thing that's missing. Why did they not kiss? Becca's just smiling at the camera.
That is somewhat of a staple in the Austin world.
Are they not gonna kiss? Don't tell me. Don't tell me. I'm not looking at you. Oh, I'll be mad if there's no kissing in this book.
You want that physical touch payoff.
That's true. Here's the thing. So I guess they reach the house. And they haven't had time yet to be like, they're speaking so pragmatically about their love for each other. They're like, do you still like me? I still like you. I like you too. Let's discuss our relationship. But no, like, I like you. Smoochy, smoochy. And now they have to pretend like there's nothing going on.
Have you taken the other implication from this conversation?
No.
I think Mr. Darcy intends to marry Elizabeth.
Yes. And then they can kiss?
Yes.
After they get married?
Are you missing out on the fact that this, in its own way, is a proposal?
Is this a proposal? But she didn't say yes or no. I mean, she did. But he has to actually propose to her. Are these last three chapters going to make me mad?
No.
Okay, good. Well, in any event, we've finished. It seems like we're already in Becca's study questions, but we have finished the chapters, and now we are moving on to Becca's study questions.
All right. So now we're on to Becca's study questions. When Catherine de Bourgh comes to visit, we get a full layout of the Bennet prospects. Everything that I've been talking to you about the Bennets and how they interact with society is basically bluntly said by Catherine de Bourgh. How do they translate when they're said out loud? How does Lydia change them?
Lydia, obviously, it was, like you said, it was her last attempt to make Lizzie see how incompatible they are. And Lydia basically brought what could have been a perfectly respectable family down because she had a scandal, and also Wickham is poor. So there's that. But just hearing it all laid out like that, I mean, yeah, they want to merge fortunes. She wants to, her family. But it's not about wealth necessarily. It's not about how much wealth Lizzie has. She is a gentleman's daughter. They have enough. It's about status, and it's about vibe, not vibe, but it's about image, like keeping the image for the public. And it would be such a blow to Darcy's family's image if he married a Bennet girl.
Yeah, and I think you also really see how that etiquette that we keep talking about is so important. This is the culmination of what happens when that etiquette is torpedoed. You have an aunt that is pretty influential, and also if Darcy were more of a Bingley type character, possibly more effective in stopping her nephew.
Mm-hmm. Well, Darcy was a Bingley type. I mean, had Lizzie not, I don't know, he just would have believed her a few months ago. I don't know. Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
He would have listened to her a while ago.
Basically, like, you can see how your family behaves, how you behave, makes a really big difference in your prospects in life and in society. So it does put into context the behavior of some of the Bennets throughout the book and how it really has endangered the happiness of several of the girls.
Yeah. But you know, if he goes to Mrs. Bennet and is like, I want to marry your daughter, she's going to be like, hell yeah.
Not going to confirm or deny that. So we have the return of Catherine de Bourgh.
Bam!
What do we learn about marriage from Catherine de Bourgh's perspective? Because she is an influential character, despite a being a bitchy one. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of different discussions about what marriage is in this time period, what love is in this time period. And I think Catherine brings some new perspective to it. And we've talked about it a little, but I wanted to like drive the point home.
The main thing I think is that marriage is a financial act and a family preserving act. And also, I don't think she believes in love as a concept, since she was like, I won't stoop to believe that Darcy would ever propose to you, because what? How, why would he? And she thinks that two mothers promising to each other that their children will marry is enough. And I think that her view of that is being threatened right now.
Yes, by her nephew's stubborn wish to marry for love.
How dare he?
Okay, so moving on to Collins's letter and Daddy Bennet, I think this is really interesting because I think you get the perspectives of the dizzy love story from Catherine de Bourgh, Mr. Bennet, Mr. Collins, and Lizzie all at the same time. So the way I see it is you have Catherine seeing it as the strong thing that's about to happen and ruin her family. You have Collins seeing this as his insolent cousin sort of running amok again. You have Mr. Bennet seeing this as this little joke from dumb people who don't even know Lizzie. And you have Lizzie, who is well aware that she's developed this intimate bond with this character. Thoughts?
Daddy Bennet's view of it is kind of like a slap in the face to the reader, because like we are so steeped in it that we forget that the rest of the world thinks that they're enemies still. Actually, they both think that the other person hates them at this point, too. So that's fun. So that was like, oh, right. People don't know that they are in love. That's just us. So that was interesting. Hearing Collins, nothing really changed there. He is regurgitating the information someone else told him, as always. We get to hear Lady Catherine de Bourgh's standpoint on it from her herself, and then how she told Collins and like basically just trying to stir the pot. And Lizzie, receiving this information, she's mortified. She's like, my private life is out there and everyone's laughing at me.
Oh, Liz. Lizzie.
She just doesn't know how to even begin to process this.
Yeah, I think that's all accurate. And I think it also gives us markers for how far we've come in the story. You have Catherine de Bourgh giving the societal perspective. You have Collins giving the perspective of someone who was there at Rosings. You have Bennet, Daddy Bennet, that is, giving perspective from the Longmorn time of their courtship. And then you have Lizzie, who's been there the entire time. And so you really map the different points of the dizzy relationship through that chapter.
Yeah, it also clocks how long it's been since the Bennet family and Lizzie have been on the same page.
Lizzie's been hiding a lot from her family this year.
Yeah.
It's been a busy year.
It has been.
Okay, that brings us to the next question, which is, this is kind of a baby proposal. Graham, the sound effect?
I had not thought about this as a proposal, to be completely honest. I know that like the next step would probably be him asking permission from the family. Oh my God. If he asks Daddy Bennet, Daddy Bennett's gonna laugh at him. Lizzie's gonna have to stand up for herself. This is a prediction, but he's gonna ask Daddy Bennet. Daddy Bennet's gonna be like, I'm sorry, what? I thought that was a joke. Lizzie's gonna be like, no, I love him. And then there's gonna be a whole thing. But I was hoping to have a bit more of a, I mean, this is like very sweet and I'm glad that they did this, but I was hoping to have something a little bit more romantic.
You want him to be like walking up to her and grabbing her face and kissing her?
Well, what happened to the scene in the rain that I see in all of these gifs on the internet? Becca's just staring at me. I know, you can't say anything.
Our listeners are gonna laugh very hard right now.
I wanna know. But like, this was very sweet. Very good, very cute. Good mini proposal. I mean, I guess, yeah, because in this time period, admitting that you're in love is like, okay, then time to get married, because we've already done the dating thing.
Basically, he's like, I'm renewing my ask.
Oh, he does from say April. That. He does say that.
Yeah. And he's like, I'll never ask again. And she's like, no, I'm in this time.
Yeah. She says, no, please ask again. It's different from proposal again and indeed.
So I wanted to compare this to his last confession of love. I think even just going from the first lines, do you remember his first line to her in the last proposal?
No. You haven't memorized.
No,
you?
I don't have it memorized.
Okay. So Mr. Darcy enters the room. In vain I have struggled. It will not do. My feelings will not be repressed. You must allow me to tell you how ardently I admire and love you.
Compare that to how he asks her in this next bit.
In this bit, he says, "You are too generous to trifle with me. If your feelings are still what they were last April, tell me so at once. My affections and wishes are unchanged, but one word for you will silence me on this subject forever."
Do you hear the modesty?
Yeah.
In that second one compared to the first one? The first one, he barges in and he's like, "Against my better judgment, as much as I've tried to fight it, I have to tell you that I love you and you're going to marry me."
Yeah.
This time he says, basically, "Listen, I know how you felt about me. If you still feel that way, it's cool. I'll never ask again. But I'm still in." The amount of care, the amount of checking in that he does in the second one.
Oh my God, just by starting, he starts by saying, "You are too generous to trifle with me. You're walking with me right now and you don't know how grateful I am." It's kind of like the way that you just phrased it. It's like the episode of Gilmore Girls Say Something. We see Luke and Lorelai. Oh, I guess, no. So on the episode where Luke and Lorelai go on their first date, Luke is like, "I just want you to know that I'm in. I'm all in." And then she just stares at him. And he's like, "Does that scare you?" And she just stares at him. And then in Say Something, when they're broken up, she's like dreaming. And she's like watching this scene replay. And he says, "I just want you to know I'm in. I'm all in." And she just doesn't say anything. And Lorelai starts yelling at herself. And she's like, "Say something." Anyway, that's a way sidebar. But he's in. He's all in. And Lizzie this time is like, "I am too."
Yeah, that's a really good, that's a good parallel. Another bickering, iconic couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically just him being like, "Listen, I will never stop loving you. You're your own woman and you can feel how you want to feel. But if you want me, I'm here.
And I will always love you." Another Gilmore Girls reference. Lorelai sings that at karaoke.
Oh my
God. And Luke walks in and they make eye contact and she's like, "Bittersweet memories." Oh, I love that show.
This is now a Gilmore Girls podcast.
Yes. Gilmore guys, come on the show.
Yes, please. Oh my God. We'd love to have you on this show.
Can you imagine if Demi Adejuwebe came on our show?
Don't joke. This is actually an open invitation,
yeah,
guys.
We love you, Demi.
Next question. We basically see them go through their whole love story together from the start to the finish, talking it through. And I thought that meant it was a good time to reflect on how they've grown through it.
Should we do some montage music?
Yes, Graham, give us the montage music, please. They meet at a party where Darcy is pissed and Lizzie gets pissed at Darcy.
We start out with, "She is tolerable but not handsome enough to tempt me."
And then pretty much a week later, he realizes, oh, that was incorrect. She's indeed tolerable enough.
She's more than tolerable, wink, wink.
We see both animosity grow and sexual tension grow as they're at Netherfield together.
And he just stands in the corner staring at her.
Growing to a culmination of them dancing at the Netherfield ball.
Being snarky towards each other.
Growing as they go through rosings. And Darcy learns how to be a little bit more polite. And Lizzie gets out of her family's shadow and truly shines on her own. We see it all fall to shit at Proposal Get-In, when neither of them know what the hell they're talking about.
Nobody addresses themselves quite as well as they have the capability to at that point.
So Darcy addresses a letter instead to Miss Elizabeth Bennet and explains his perspective on their entire acquaintance.
Darcy writes much better than he speaks.
Lizzie overthinks everything,
as she is wont to do,
and realizes this entire time she's been hating the wrong man.
Gasp.
She finds him again at Pemberley and realizes, not only is he actually kind of a nice guy, he's got stellar interior decorating skills.
Which is important to her.
Very important. We see him defend her to Caroline Bingley, introduce her to Georgiana Darcy, and ultimately save her family from utter ruin. All of which he does for her. Finally, we see his family try to come between them, only to reveal to Darcy that Lizzie, in fact, had feelings for him all along, all leading up to a moment where both these idiots finally confess their feelings to each other.
Finally talk.
And are destined to live happily ever after, all without kissing.
Without kissing.
Now, this is important in a certain way, because Jane Austen is not big on the physical intimacy in her books. And that is because, in the time, you really couldn't be that physically intimate. But also, it's because the story really is about two people falling in love with each other because of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a story that has its moments of touching and emotional charge and physical charge. But really, the way the story plays out, it's not about the fact that they want to bone each other. It is underneath. But the fact that they don't touch each other is also part of the sexiness of it, the romance of it.
Yeah, I kind of love it, actually. I mean, I do want that big moment of like, I love you. Like, they didn't even say I love you right now. They just like talked about, oh, yeah, this is a recitation of all the events that have happened in our relationship this far and how we feel about them. I want that big romantic feel it moment, but it like also wouldn't feel right for the style of this book to have them kiss.
So on to our standbys. Funniest quote.
I think it's got to be one that I've probably already read, and I'm just going to read the whole dang thing, because why the heck not? Oh, cried Elizabeth, I am extremely diverted, but it is so strange. This we're talking about Darcy being the one to be rumored to be proposed to her. Quote from Natty Bennett. Yes, that is what makes it amusing. Had they fixed on any other man, it would have been nothing, but his perfect indifference and your pointed dislike make it so delightfully absurd. Much as I abominate writing, I would not give up Mr. Collins's correspondence for any consideration. Nay, when I read a letter of his, I cannot help giving him the preference even over Wickham, much as I value the impudence and hypocrisy of my son-in-law.
Great choice. Questions moving forward?
Well, okay, will they kiss? I like dumb rom-coms, so I just want to know if they will. But it's okay if they don't. Do what you want to do. Will Darcy, like, get rejected by Lizzie's parents? That's a big one. Will Lizzie tell them? Will they get married? I don't know. I don't. There's only 3 chapters left. I really don't know what's going to happen.
Who wins the chapters?
Darcy? Lizzie? Darcy? Lizzie? Dizzy?
Dizzy?
Darcy?
Darcy?
Dizzy.
Dizzy?
Dizzy.
Dizzy. Okay. That concludes this episode of Pod and Prejudice with Dizzy taking the win for winning the chapters, which I totally agree with.
This has been Becca and Molly fangirling very hard over our stupid, stupid, stupid boy, Darcy.
Oh, yes. And our stupid, stupid, stupid girl.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Very, very
They're both
stupid,
incredible.
Stupid couple.
We love them both.
Yeah. We love.
All right. We love you all. Stay safe, everyone. And until next week, stay proper.
And find yourself a Darcy. Find yourself a Darcy, not a Wickham.
Love it.
Pod and Prejudice is edited by Molly Burdick and audio produced by Graham Cook. Our beautiful show art is designed by Torrance Brown. To learn more about our show and our team, you can check out our website at podandprejudice.com. To keep up with the show, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Pod and Prejudice. If you like what you hear, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/podandprejudice to see how you can support us, or just drop us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening.